Hello and welcome in to another edition of the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. Always remember to go to thesabre.com to read the latest on the Wahoos, including feature stories, as well as the message board, some analysis, and everything else to get you ready for the game week ahead. And this is game week one against Richmond coming up. We'll have a little bit of Richmond preview coming up later. But just remember, Who's On podcast, follow, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you can find your podcast, and leave a five-star review too, if you like what you hear. But let's get right into it. Introducing our guest today is the boss man himself from thesabre.com, Chris Wright. Chris, football season, it's finally here. We saw a little bit of football last week, and now we get to see Virginia play this Saturday against Richmond. Just your thoughts on finally getting here after a long summer and a long fall camp.
You know, it doesn't feel like it's been that long to me. Just anytime baseball goes late,
yeah,
and make the College World Series, the ACC kickoff and all of that just seems to pop up quickly. And I know we haven't played a game yet, but I feel like we've been kind of in football mode for over a month in terms of the media. So it's like, well, yeah, let's get to the games already.
Yeah, you probably, in all realisticness, you got like 4 weeks from the end of baseball season to when you started talking about, you know, football again. And you know, obviously, you know, sometimes basketball fills that time. You have the Olympics this year, so there's plenty of stuff going on. It never really feels like it stops, but we'll call it a break in quotation marks. But today we're going to get into obviously a Richmond preview, but obviously, you know, we're going to start with kind of a review of the press conference. You know, it sounds weird to review the press conference, but you know, kind of what Tony Elliott was talking about this week. And we got our first look at the depth chart for the season, and not a lot of surprises, but there were a couple in there. Just kind of what was the most surprising thing to you when you saw that first look at the depth chart on Tuesday?
I think anything that was too surprising, maybe a couple of the freshman names being on the two deep, you know, which we'll get into maybe. The, you know, the running backs, no surprises. Receivers, not really a surprise to me. Like, I didn't see a whole lot that jumped out. You know, I one thing I don't think it's brought up a lot is Sparks kicking off. It may be surprising to some fans out there. I know they had been looking at it. We were kind of aware of it as media, but with him being listed as the lead kickoff guy, I at least think that's interesting, even if it's not surprising. You know, he'll be doing triple duty. He's the holder on kicks now, and obviously the punter as well.
A lot younger on your kickoff man too this year, so that's something to note. Yeah, I guess the surprising thing, and we'll talk about it again later, was the name Billy Kadulka, who not a lot of people knew about. He was a walk-on to the roster. We're going to hear from Tony Elliott in just a little bit talking about Kadulka, but just was kind of that initial name when you're scanning through there and you're like, well, is this like a EA Sports, like old school college football made up name that we haven't heard before? But yeah, not a ton of surprises on there. I was a little surprised to see maybe some of the oars at the cornerback position. I thought Kempton Shine, just from everything we had heard, had kind of established himself as the corner, but you know, sometimes they just write or there just, you know, for the sake of it. It doesn't really sound like Kendrick Smith is factoring that much into the, you know, outside cornerback position, more of a safety or in that nickel role where you see Corey Thomas and Malcolm Green. Also kind of interesting that you have both of them there, but again, they kind of play different variations, I guess, of that spur position. But I guess biggest question mark as you look at this, we did get some injuries. We could do a quick little injury update. Tony Elliott said Ben Smiley was injured during camp. He's been integrated back into things this week, and he could play against Richmond, although, you know, but a little too early to put him on the two deep right now. Noah Vaughn at running back, he talked, you know, pretty gushingly about in the press conference yesterday, calling kind of the most complete running back on the roster, but he has a stress reaction in his leg. They're being cautious with him, and it could be another week or two before he returns to play. And of course, J.R. Wilson, Bryce Carter, they're still out, probably going to miss the first couple games of the season. So that kind of updates you, but any big questions if you look at that depth chart?
Yeah, Ben Smiley was the biggest injury update. My biggest question is offensive line health. I know they're all listed there, but I know that there's been some up and down And even Coach Elliott said that during the press conference, that it had been up and down on the offensive line. And the name you have to wonder about is Mikhail Boley, right? He sat out a bunch of the early part of training camp with a high ankle sprain. He was working his way back from it. You never really know how high ankle sprains are going to react once you start putting weight back on them. And obviously, those guys are big up front, so it's not just a little bit of weight. We're talking 300 and some pounds worth of weight on that ankle. So that one, I'm just curious how he moves. What they would do if they need to move guys around. I know that there's a bunch of names listed on the offensive line, but in reality, I think Christ would move over and be the left tackle, even though he's not listed there. I know he did that some in some of the scrimmages this fall, so or in this preseason camp. So I'm just interested in the offensive line in general, how they would move pieces around if somebody is still a little bit, restricted in terms of snap counts and things like that.
Yeah, and that's a good point because I think when some fans may look at the depth chart, they're like, all right, well, this is the direct backup to this guy. Well, not necessarily. Guys can move around. It's, they can move to, whoever the next best guy is. And so Jimmy Crist probably is that an offensive tackle. You see him behind Blake Steen right now, but he certainly worked at left tackle throughout training camp and fall camp. And it's just like other guys, like Ugonna Nana is probably ahead of probably Charlie Patterson at guard. But he's listed behind Noah Josi right now. But I heard, Brian Stevens mentioned that he'd been battling with Ty Furnish at that right guard spot for most of training camp. So there's several of those cases. I'm kind of curious with the defensive line depth, because we knew that was a big thing for them. And they've had some injuries, Bryce Carter, Ben Smiley. They have some younger guys coming up, of obviously Mekhi Buchanan, who's out for the season. How much are they going to rotate on the defensive line? Because I know they want to have almost, two starting defensive lines. I don't think we're relatively close to that at this point. I know Jason Hammond and Mike Diatta had a good battle for that defensive tackle spot next to Jameer Carter. But the depth outside of the starters look really solid with Chico Bennett, Cam Butler, Jameer Carter, Jason Hammond, but outside of those guys, it looks a little shallow right now, and part of that's due to injuries. So, kind of interested to see just how they rotate that, especially week one against Richmond, and see what you got there. But
The name that jumps
I,
out to me there is Terrell Jones. It doesn't get talked about a lot. He's listed as a tackle on the roster, but he's listed, I think, as Butler's backup on the depth chart, which is not really a tackle. And he was working with Chris Slade at the last media open session that we got to see. We see fundamental drills a lot. We don't see scrimmaging. And he was working with Chris Slade's group. So that's a name I think is maybe interesting to keep an eye on. Just because he's an upperclassman, hasn't broken through yet, hasn't really been talked about, but may need to take some snaps. So how
No,
does he do with those snaps?
I think they're planning on it because John Rudzinski mentioned him as a guy that could help fill some of the depth that they lost with Buchanan's injury, and now with Ben Smiley being banged up. And T. Jones was a pretty, productive high school recruit and kind of near the top of the recruiting class when he came into Virginia. So it's kind of been just waiting on him to see if what he's gonna do. And so this could be his first real chance at getting some real playing time. All right, take him to the press conference now. I know there's some topics that we haven't touched on yet, because that's because we're saving them for what I'm going to call the rewind. Listen to us back to some of these press conference bites from the week. Tony Elliott spoke yesterday to the media before the Richmond game, and spoke a lot about Anthony Calandria. Obviously, that was the big news of the week, with that getting released on a Saturday morning. I don't know, Chris, what were you doing on Saturday morning?
I was actually working when it came out. So I was
So
sitting, I wasn't
you
working
were
because of that. I
the
was doing something else. But
you were the one of the few people that was prepared. I was, I think we were in the middle of watching Bluey or something, about to finally get the remote back from my kids to watch some college football with the Florida State game coming on later. But so what, not exactly prepared for that, but yeah, Tony Elliott here talking about Anthony Calandria and some of what he saw in some of the live scrimmage reps. And kind of why they gave the job to Anthony Calandria. A lot of it focused on ball security.
all we can do in terms of where we are right now is evaluate the live scrimmage reps. That's the closest thing we get to the game. And all indications is that the maturity has taken place related to AC just in the live scrimmage reps. which gives us confidence that we're going to see improvement in the game.
All right, Chris, just kind of taking that from what you hear from Tony Elliott, he talked a lot about Calandria yesterday, but obviously they've emphasized ball security so much. Just your thoughts on the quarterback battle and also just kind of, you know, where Calandria might be this year as far as taking better care of the ball.
So my stance on this has been that I would go Musket if I were the coaching staff, if I thought that you could win six games. Mm-hmm. If you're not 100% sure you can get there with Tony Musket, then I understand rolling with what, you know, that you think gives you the best chance overall. So I wasn't overly surprised they went with Calandria, because I don't think this team has a lot of margin where they feel like they can just game manage their way to six wins. You know what I mean? Like, and Musket's really solid, throws the ball well, makes good decisions, all of that. But there's not the chunk play threat, or it doesn't feel like there's the chunk play threat that Calandria brings, right? So I think the reason ball security keeps coming up is because everybody saw what happened last year with some of the critical decision points, particularly in some key moments. And really, that was early in the season when he was kind of thrown in. Right. Mm-hmm. We're thinking of the Maryland game and some of those really early ones when.
Yeah. NC State. Yep.
I mean, the kid was like barely in college. You know, I know he came here in the spring and stuff, but like, yeah, I mean, just really early. And he cleaned it up as the season went on. But I think everyone still remembers those plays and remembers the style that he's willing to try to cram it in there. He's, I always say he's running around like, you know, with the ball all over the place. You know what I mean? So he put the ball on the ground five times last year. Virginia only lost one of those, but he wasn't super good at keeping it secure when he was scrambling. So I think it comes up a lot because people have that in their mind. They can see it, even though it improved as the year went on. We'll see, right? Like, once the game is real, muscle memory takes over, right? And that's Coach Elliott says a lot, that you have to muscle memory, you have to repeat it, you have to rep. Has he had enough reps when the game is real to muscle memory his way into good decisions? We'll see.
Yeah, and it's interesting because everyone thinks the interceptions, but you mentioned the fumble there. Elliott kind of talked about, you know, carrying the ball high and tight, you know, the old coaching cliches and all that. But it's interesting with the interceptions, and, you know, fans remember them, but he remembers them a lot too, because I asked him about freshman mistakes early on in camp, and he was talking specifically about the interception against Maryland in the red zone when it was only a, you know, one score game. I think they were down 21-14 at the time, or against NC State when they were driving late in that game, and he throws a pick down the field when he probably didn't even need to throw the ball down the field in that play. And it seems like it's a little bit of training out of what he's always kind of been like. I talked to his mom for a story coming out on thesaber.com soon, just kind of a little more deep dive on Anthony Calandria. Should probably be out by the time this podcast airs. But looking at, you know, he's always played behind, you know, shaky offensive lines. Not saying that, you know, UVA's offensive line hasn't been great, but, you know, even back in high school and going back. So he's always just been programmed to run the ball, run around, scramble, just chuck the ball downfield. That's kind of been his MO. And so really what Coach Lamb, Coach Kitchings, and Coach Elliott have been trying to do is just, like, you know, trust the system, just play within the system, make those plays. And, you know, at time from time, you can still make some of those big plays. But I guess, you know, like Elliott said, you know, you can only really see, you know, when the game comes. But speaking of Calandria,
since we're in Richmond preview mode, I just want to throw this out. This is in my game preview. Richmond has an interception in 10 of its last 13 games. So they are a team that will take it away if you're not careful with it.
And a lot of guys coming back on that defense from last year, too. They're a really good, productive defense at the FCS level. But sticking on Calandria real quick, this was an interesting one yesterday. And I think a lot of people, when they hear Calandria, they think back to maybe some things that he might have said, especially specifically after the Duke game, about beating Virginia Tech, and, you know, that coming back to bite him a little bit last year. So a little more guarded with the media yesterday, and Mike Barber from the Richmond Times-Dispatch asked him about it. You followed up on it. So let's listen to that right now.
A year ago, you were a little more, I would say, outspoken, maybe. Mm-hmm. Did they talk to you at all about, you know, what you say to reporters now that you're the starting quarterback, or any of that? I see you smiling. I mean, did you get any coaching in terms of, because there's more to this job than just on the field. Did you get any coaching in that area?
No, not really. Just got to be smart with media.
Did you come to that conclusion on your own then, that you made the decision you're going to approach it differently?
Yeah, yes, sir, I did.
All right, Chris, you wrote about this a little bit on thesaber.com yesterday, on Tuesday. Just what did you make of, kind of Anthony Calandra and how he approached the big media scrum on Tuesday?
Yeah, I just kind of laughed because it was very Lou Holtz like, like Richmond's great, Richmond's disciplined, Richmond is awesome. I'm gonna do whatever I can to help the team win. Like all the stuff you should say. I'm not saying you shouldn't say it.
Yeah.
Like it was just so like robotic versus you can say those things and make it sound like you're saying something a little different.
Yeah.
Right. He was just very da 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 da. And it's like, okay, like clearly this is purposeful. And that's the only reason I thought that was interesting. Listen, he wasn't that inflammatory last year.
No, it was really just the one quote that everyone thinks back to.
Right. Typically he was sort of like saying similar things, right? Yeah, I was trying to get Malik the ball. I just want to put the ball in Malik's hands. Like those type of answers last year, it was the one quote. So it wasn't overly surprising, but it was very robotic. And so that I just thought it was interesting from that standpoint. Well, we'll see how he handles it once he settles in, right? Like, I'm sure he'll be measured
bad. Yeah.
And more controlled, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I think every quarterback kind of goes through this, especially young ones. Remember, he's only 19 years old right now and, just is coming off his first season of college football and just was named the starting quarterback. But I think everyone kind of goes through this like, oh, maybe I'm given too much and maybe you need to roll back. And I'm sure maybe teammates say something from here or there and, maybe not like, hey, you need to calm down with the media or just like, oh, that was kind of wild what you said there. And he's like, could be up in your head a little bit just coming off of that.
Even with the Virginia Tech result, that game was a blowout, obviously.
Yeah.
I actually think Virginia fans like that he said it.
Oh, for sure.
I don't think Virginia fans are mad about it at all. So
I mean, I made the point that I think if they had won that game somehow, that they probably would have gone outside and immediately built him a statue or something outside Scott Stadium, just because you like a little brashness with your quarterback. And I think in that moment, everyone was thinking, all right, well, this kid's, got some spunk. I mean, Brian Stevens called him spunky yesterday. So he still has that. I think he's just going to have to kind of learn and how he wants to approach the media going forward. Looking at we talked about the depth chart. We talked about some surprises on it. The biggest one, I think, just the name that no one knew of was Billy Kadelka, who's backing up Chico Bennett. Here's Tony Elliott talking about the former lacrosse player now on the roster.
With Kadelka, man, he's long, and obviously surprised everybody, because here's a guy that had opportunities to go play lacrosse other places and decided that he wanted to come to UVA and walk on, and he's tall, he's lanky, but when he puts his hand in the ground, he plays football. So he comes from a situation where he's got a great background, and so we got a lot of young guys battling, and he just happened to be the one that was the furthest along.
All right, with Kadelka in there on the two deep, he is one of, I think, four true freshmen on the two deep. That's Grant Elliger at center, Ethan Minter at safety, and Kadelka at the bandit position, and then also Max Prosny as the backup place kicker and backup kickoff guy for the Cavaliers. So what do you make of some of the freshmen we've seen? Coach Elliott's also mentioned a couple other ones throughout camp. Cam Courtney was one at wide receiver. And also, I think, trying to think, Kevon Gray is another one he mentioned at corner.
And he's mentioned Jewett Hayes a couple of times as well.
Jewett Hayes, yes, yeah.
The obviously, Kudelka is surprising. I haven't even learned how to say it yet. That's how surprising it is, right? Like, no one saw that coming. Anytime you talk about walk-on lacrosse player, Virginia fans immediately go Patrick Kearney, right?
Yes.
So that name's come up on the message board, reasonably so. He's a Virginia legend, right? So, that the most surprising name, most surprising left-off name was Courtney at receiver. I expected him to be on that list and wasn't. I don't think that means much unless he's injured and they don't want to tell us yet.
No, I think it's more that you have your two deep and he is mainly training in that slot receiver role where Chris Tyree and Sadarian Harrison already are. And obviously he's not going to be above those two guys at this point, but I still expect him to get some playing time.
I think so too, especially since you can play Where's Waldo with Tyree if you want to.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be the slot receiver. So it'll be interesting to see how they use Tyree, but focusing on the true freshman, the name I want to watch the closest is Ethan Minter. Did not play a lot of defense in high school. Some, but not a lot. But apparently gets it. And those type of players have become very successful in Virginia's program. So is he the latest to begin that arc, right? I'm not saying he's going to play a ton with Senker in front of him, obviously, but Jonas is kind of like that himself.
Yeah.
A kid that played eight-man football, wasn't super highly regarded, emerges as an all-ACC safety. Is this the beginning of a similar story? We'll see.
Yeah, Jonas is the first to tell you, like, he wasn't really even all that focused on defense when you're playing eight-man football. I mean, he was playing quarterback, running back, wide receiver, just all over the formation in high school, and then he gets to, college and turns out to be a really good defensive back. And I think some of that is that quarterback mindset. And Ethan Minter was a successful high school quarterback at Thomas Dale here in the Richmond area. So yeah, that's one. And he's kind of when he got there early on, he's been one that has really kind of fast-tracked and really earned some reps on that defense. I think he'll be one to watch. I've also heard some good things about Kiki Adams at the safety position. So I think overall, depth-wise at the safety position, they're in really good hands because you got a guy that started a good amount of games last year, and Caleb Hardy, that's a backup safety as well, a young guy. So the future looks pretty good there, even though you
Also
got.
like that Mentor's wearing number 30.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I don't know. Was it Nate Lyles maybe that
Yeah,
is that the name I'm thinking of?
there
Like,
you go. That's a deep dive. Yeah, I like
yeah,
that.
number 30 for Virginia. I just like that number at safety.
Yeah, it looks good. Speaking of defense, we'll stick on that side of the ball. Last year, pass rush, obviously, I think they would even say abysmal, especially when Cam Butler led the team in sacks after only playing four games. He had 3.5 sacks. But here is Chico Bennett, who was also banged up last year, kind of talking about what to expect from him, but also Butler coming back on this defense.
Domination, man. Domination. Motor, high motor at the end of each game. You know, you say that, 15 can just keep going. And then just, show that, hey, he's gonna help. Obviously with 82 on the other side, both guys gonna get the job done, be able to get us to the ACC championship.
Hi, Chris. What do you think about this pass rush? Some veteran guys there in Butler and Bennett. Do you expect them to kind of have that bounce back year this year?
Well, there's nowhere to go but up. They tied for last in FBS with sacks last year, only 11. So you can't get worse. That's the good
Yeah.
news. Will they jump all the way up where Bennett had, six, seven, eight, nine sacks? Will Butler, if he stays healthy the whole time, he was right at 0.8 sacks per game when he got hurt, and he didn't play that whole fourth game. He only played part of
Yeah.
the fourth game. So if those two guys are both going to flirt with seven sacks each, eight sacks each, that's a dramatically different. They alone by themselves would surpass the total from last season.
Yeah.
So really, those two guys hold the key to it, I think. I think some other guys can get involved. Jamari Carter maybe playing some passing downs when he hasn't a whole lot in previously in his career. We mentioned Jones. Is he a guy that's going to break out this year? I don't know any of the answers. What I do know is talk of being dominant on defense. I think we should pump the brakes a little bit. You gotta walk before you can get all the way up to dominant. But last year's team was the only John Rodzinski team to rank outside the top 50 in total defense with him as a coordinator. Every year at Air Force, his first year at Virginia, top 50 total defense team in terms of yards allowed per game. Last year is the anomaly. So I do think they're gonna be way better than they were. I think injuries really caught them off guard last year. And listen, it could again. This team still doesn't have
Always,
a ton
yeah.
of depth. You were talking about defensive line depth already. Injuries could derail it again. But if I think if they're healthy with the experience they have, this is going to be a pretty good defense. We'll just see if dominant can even get on the radar. But let's start
Yeah.
with being pretty good.
Yeah, get back up to average, maybe slightly above average, and then we'll mention the word dominant maybe down the road. But yeah, like you said, like it was surprising that this defense kind of fell off as much as it did from year one under Rodzinski to year two. And yeah, there are a ton of injuries. Butler, obviously the biggest one. Bennett was bad. He played a lot last year, but he was battling injuries the whole way through. Antonio Cleary missed the whole season. So you were kind of behind the eight ball in that regard. And so maybe it was some better health, but also just I think last year, another weird thing for this defense is you had such good cornerback play the year before with Anthony Johnson and Fintrell Cypress that really helped them. Last year, I think that was probably the weakest spot for the defense. And I know we talk a lot about the pass rush, but you didn't really have a lot of production at the cornerback position. I know Cohen King played a lot, but not really his true position. Sam Westfall played a little bit, but I think they have better cornerback depth this year. If those guys can stay healthy, I mean, Dre Walker showed some promise, but he's been banged up and banged up more in fall camp. Jam Jackson, Kempton Shine have been guys that transferred in that, got to adjust and play at this level. I like Shine a lot though. So it could, Elliot mentioned, the corners will help the pass rush, but also, and vice versa as well. Last thing, Tony Elliott, obviously it's a Richmond preview. So let's hear the head coach talk about what he sees in this Richmond Spiders team.
So they're an experienced, confident bunch. And, it's a team that started, 3-5 and then said, you know what, we're going to finish. So they understand what it takes to win. And then they make it to the second round of the playoff. Their program's won a national championship. So they got the coaching pedigree.
Last soundbite there, Coach Elliott talking about the Richmond Spiders, a veteran team. We talked about that defense earlier. Just initial thoughts, and then after the break, we'll get more into kind of our preview for this game specifically. But initial thoughts on this Richmond team.
Yeah, back-to-back FCS playoff appearances. Won 9 games last year. A lot of experienced guys back. Better be ready to play.
Yeah,
That's my
absolutely.
general thought.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. And I think that really nothing else to add. And we'll get more into the Richmond Spiders coming up after this break. Welcome back in. We're going to get right into this Richmond preview. Some Spiders notes here. Looking at it, still up to this day, have not named a starting quarterback. Doesn't look like they will before Saturday. On their depth chart, they've listed both sophomores Kyle Wickersham and Camden Coleman as or. They have an or between those two. Wickersham started 7 games last season, Coleman 4 games. And Wickersham, probably more of a dual threat guy. He had 400 yards on the ground. He can move around the ball a little bit. And Tony Elliott talked about that too, as kind of, maybe one of the more experienced quarterbacks that they've got coming back. They started 4 guys at the position last year. They're hoping to just stick with Wickersham and Coleman this year and playing both of those guys. They got off to a slow start last year, but ended up finishing tied for first in the CAA. Their time in the CAA just is, it's weird. Their time in the CAA is coming up. They're moving on to the Patriot League, I think, after this season, which is weird as a Richmond native, just used to seeing, the Richmond Spiders in the CAA and, back in the days with JMU, William and Mary, and kind of all those rivalry games. But looking at that quarterback spot, obviously we know UVA's quarterback. We don't know much about Richmond's quarterback. Does it really change much, depending on which guy they have in there?
I don't think it'll change a whole lot because you have film on both
Yes.
and you've had all summer. So Virginia shouldn't be surprised by either guy or both. You could see both. I'm assuming Wickersham because he started the most games last
It
year. And
seems
these
like,
early
yeah.
games, you want to test defenses to see rush lane discipline. Do guys turn their back in coverage and you can scramble? So you want your mobile guy out there in these type of games, I think. So I'm betting on
Yeah.
Wickersham, but very well could see both.
It just feels like it gives Richmond more options if they got a guy that can be mobile out there. I mean, and Coleman is just the complete opposite of mobile. He finished with negative 28 yards last year rushing, so he's not even attempting to really run it. So Wickersham just gives you an extra threat there. All right, looking now into predictions, let's give a player to watch for both Virginia and Richmond. Let's start with Virginia, since that's obviously the home team. Chris, is there one player that you have your eye on Saturday for the Cavaliers?
Yeah, there's a lot of choices here, I think. I'll go Malachi Fields just because he's kind of the biggest returning name on offense other than Calandria, unless you want to talk an offensive lineman, but whoever picks an offensive lineman and the player to watch spot, right? Like you could easily pick Brian Stevens because once they flipped him over to center, that's when things seemed to stabilize last year.
He's probably the most important player on the roster, honestly, just with
Probably,
what
yeah.
his impact, yeah.
So you could pick that, but I'm just going Malachi Fields. He had a big year last year. There's been a little bit of talk about him trying to take the next step into contested catches and all that jazz. So I'm interested just because, he's a Charlottesville kid. I'm rolling with Malachi.
Yeah, Malachi in the previous podcast, he's my pick to lead the team in receiving yards this year. But also, I feel really strongly about the year that he could have. I'm firmly planting my flag, and I think he'll at least be second team all ACC by the end of the year. And I feel even better about that now that Calandria is out there, and they might air the ball out a little bit more with Calandria. My player to watch, just out of an interest level, is Chris Tyree. And I could go the same way, the same reasoning for Corey Thomas on the defensive side of the ball. I just want to see where Chris Tyree lines up. And I know you don't show the whole playbook in week one, especially against Richmond, an FCS opponent, but You know, they got him listed as the starting slot receiver. They have him listed as kick return, punt return. We've seen him in practice get handoffs on jet sweeps. So I just want to see, how do they use Tyree early on in the season? You know, how much of a workload do they give him? Obviously, he has explosive tendencies. He can really run the ball once he gets the ball in his hands. And so just kind of interested to see what they do with him. And same thing with Corey Thomas on the defensive side of the ball. Where do they line him up? How is him playing that spur position different from Malcolm Green playing that spur position? And just really intrigued by both of those transfers, just because it's our first time seeing them in a UVA uniform and how they get used. Looking
I'm personally fascinated by Thomas because he wasn't really a full-time starter at Akron.
Yep.
But all the hype this offseason has been, oh, he looks so much like Quinn Blanding in that number three jersey, and he's Mr. Versatile and he can do everything. And it's like, well, if he can do all that, then why didn't he start at Akron of all places? Right.
It's a good point.
I'm not saying they're lying. I'm just saying, like, I need to see it.
Oh, I know. I think it'll probably look more like a bit role kind of with how they use them. I think they'll use them to, you know, maybe blitz off the edge. They'll use them to cover maybe some bigger tight ends or some maybe not as shifty slot guys that maybe they would rather have Malcolm Green defend. And also just another guy in there on the rundowns. That's a bigger guy at that safety spot. So I don't know if I see him playing, you know, all three downs or being that, you know, heavy usage starter, but I think they're going to use them in a lot of different ways. That's kind of why I'm interested. But looking at Richmond now, is there a player that's kind of sparked your interest from the Spiders?
I'm assuming you're going to go the receiver. So I'm going to say D'Angelo Stocker had three interceptions. Okay. We're worried about Calandria's interceptions from last year. You know, Wayne Galloway, the linebacker, also had two interceptions, returned both for touchdowns. So those are the guys that caught my eye just because we're curious about Calandria's ball security.
Yeah, and I think those are both good picks, and especially this defense with how many guys they got coming back. You want to take a look at, you know, some of those experienced guys that got coming back. I am going to go with Nick DeGennaro, the wide receiver, 6'1". Just, I mean, honestly, partly just because of the hair. I mean, have you seen it? It's a lot. It's some flowing locks out there, and I love seeing that in a receiver. But, you know, 72 catches last year, 912 yards receiving, 11 touchdowns. So big time red zone threat for the Spiders if they get down to that area. Definitely someone to watch. Another guy, I just got to give a quick shout out, Landon Ellis, Charlottesville native, just got to rep him, as a, you know, Woodbury alum, just excited to see him come back to the area and see what he can do against the Cavaliers. All right. Prediction time, Chris, what is your score prediction? And who do you have winning this game on Saturday?
I think Virginia wins, and I actually don't think it's going to be as close as people are anticipating.
Okay.
So I can't quite wrap my brain around what score I want to put.
Yeah, scores are hard.
Either, but
yeah,
you know, the 2022 game, Virginia won 34-17, but that game was sort of close for a while. Yeah. And this one might be too. Listen, you know, there's limited possessions. The Florida State Georgia Tech game, I think they each had seven possessions. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to run away in a game that, depending on how the possessions shake out. And I know Virginia wants to play a little bit fast. So I don't know exactly how many possessions are going to be in the game. It's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I think let's go 37-14. That might be bold, but I know they're 20-point favorites roughly.
You were right around what I was thinking. I had 38-10 in my head for Virginia. Yeah, I think it's also important, you know, you can't take much out of week one, and no one game, as Greg Medea from the Daily Progress likes to say, is going to decide your season. But I think they want to show, you know, a little bit something and kind of get some interest, show a little bit. So 38-10, where they kind of, you know, control the game throughout. I see Richmond maybe scoring early in the first half, in the first quarter, maybe early second quarter. I think they score early, but Virginia's kind of running the show from there on out, as this game proceeds. And I think they might take the foot off the brake a little bit in the second half as well. Any final thoughts as we head into the first game of the season? Anything you're excited to see?
New video board. That'll be cool. Like, in terms of exciting to see, like, visually. But I'm curious. I'm just curious about this team. I don't have a good feel for it. Like, I know that's hard for people to buy in. Almost the entire fan base is in show me mode if they're paying attention at all. And I think that's concerning as a as a program. But for this team itself, I'm just curious because I think there's some pieces here that could make it interesting. And what Virginia fans are really clamoring for is competence. I think I said that on the best seat this week. Physicality. Like, are you in the right spot? Are there no dumb, really dumb stuff? You're going to have some mistakes. I'm not saying mistake-free, pristine football. I just mean, like, there's a look to it, a preparedness to it. That's really what I'm most interested to see is there a prepared, tough-minded team, or is the fit thing just on the new, just on the wall, fast, intelligent, tough? And Coach Elliott said that yesterday, or said that in the press conference. Like, we got to turn these into verbs. So fast, intelligent, tough. It's all over the new facility. Okay. Are you fast? Are you intelligent? Are you tough? I don't think you've been any of those things consistently these first 2 years. And that's not me being rude. It's just, hey, make them verbs. You said it yourself. I want to see it.
Yeah, no, I think just to echo that, I think fans are waiting for a moment to kind of sit up in their seat, to keep the TV on, to buy a ticket to go to the game. They're waiting to see something. And I think that kind of starts on Saturday against Richmond. Can you, you know, control that game? Can you comfortably get out of there and kind of build momentum as you go on? Because we've talked so much, you know, this first five games for Virginia, there's a lot of opportunity for there for them. And can they kind of keep continuing building that momentum early on in the season? But Chris, I want to thank you again for joining the podcast today, the Who's On Podcast episode 2, previewing the Richmond game. That is a wrap for us today. I hope you join us next week when we react to some football, finally, something on the field. But thanks again for joining us.